This is a heavy one. Patrick Gower in the studio to talk about his new documentary, Patrick Gower on P.
Not one to shy away from the issues.
Yeah. And this, I honestly think this is one of the biggest issues facing us in Aotearoa New Zealand, and that's why I've done it. But there's no question it's been brutal doing it, because it's a brutal drug. You know, it's really brutal.
We have asked for a few texts to come through, and true to that point, Paddy, some strong paragraphs coming in of people directly affected. And I mean, it is, you know, and thank you so much for texting this stuff through, everyone. I know it takes a lot of guts, and a lot of heartache has come of this drug. You were saying it mostly came on your radar around the weed doco, but was it, you obviously, like, just fucking living in Auckland, you see it, you know,
around. Yeah, yeah, and in my job outside of the docos, I'm travelling around New Zealand a lot, and people do come up to me and talk to me about what's happening. You know, we need a bridge, we need this, da-da-da-da-da, you know. And repeatedly in the doco and around New Zealand, people would come up to me and say, hey man, the problem in this town is P. And I'll list a few of them. Stratford, Paihiatua, Waipukarau, Pukekohe. These are places that I've been. Gore, Westport. We go to Westport in the doco. It's called Methport. That's the nickname for it now. Okay. You know, all of these places, small towns in particular, Fielding, I got invited up there. And did a story up there for News Hub about a peace support group there. And it just kept coming onto my radar that it was obviously everywhere in Auckland, and small towns in particular. It is just absolutely smashing them. It's tearing them down and ripping them up.
Is it like a boredom meets something to do type thing?
100%. And it's just an availability and an escape, and it's used by all sorts, you know, mums who are struggling a little bit raising their kids, not in a bad way, but just the way that mums, anyone who's been a young mum or a young parent can know how hard that can be.
A Rolling Stones song called Mother's Little Helper.
Yeah, and it's become like that as well in a lot of places. And look, it's just wrecking the place. I know people probably think they know that already.
But on that though, this text here, yo brothers, how come we all seem to know about P being an epidemic, but the government is pretending it's not happening? How many school lunches do we think it steals from our children? But then I guess there's no depression in New Zealand. Oh, that's a you know, little.
Yeah, but I'll say to that guy.
What is the government doing?
I agree with him 100%. So if you take one P user and look at exactly what happens to their life, invariably their partner gets on it and they both get addicted and they start beating the shit out of each other. And so you've got serious domestic violence in the first instance. They run out of money and they steal. And I tell you, the first place they steal out of, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people who've been through this journey.
Family.
They steal off their family. So they start to tear up their family. You know, the parents are the first in line. Then the next thing that happens is that they lose their kids. Either their kids go to the grandparents or their kids go to Oranga Tamariki. Then you look at the crime that they do, that they commit to do it, the dealing that they do to pay for their habit to their friends and the other addicts that they create, and the story starts moving around a whole kind of town as they infect it. And then all of the stuff like suicides. How much pee is behind suicides in New Zealand? We don't know. On the roads, car accidents, forget about weed. You know, cops will tell you that it's P that is causing the accidents. That's what's making people speed, drive aggressively, and cause fatal accidents, which we know have this gigantic cost as well. If we got that data together as a government and said, what's this actually costing us, this P epidemic? What is it costing us? And if we got rid of it, how much would we save? You know, it would be, it's costing us billions, and we would save billions by spending hundreds of millions.
So they're essentially, the government's rolling blind, so they kind of don't know what they can do because they don't know what the problem actually is.
You know, I hate to be cynical, but I feel like the government doesn't want to know P is doing.
That's kind of
because it's just like, okay, we don't really want to know because then we've got to do something about it.
And scary to find out, which you've obviously found out, and this documentary together.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard, too hard for us to address.
Look ourselves in the face.
Do you have any sort of idea in mind for what the solution might be for New Zealand. I've always been an advocate for full legalization of all drugs, mainly psychedelics, but I've always had a bit of reticence to say, oh, you know, maybe methamphetamine and heroin should also be legal because they seem to have the most sort of attraction to users.
Yeah, I think, look, and people will see the documentary tomorrow night, but decriminalizing or legalizing or just not prosecuting users and even users up to a medium level users, potential low level dealers, because they are actually users as well. You know, if we look at what it's doing, just not doing that and actually treating it as a health issue and getting them help within their local region through the DHB has to be the way that we're going to go on this. We haven't tried that yet. We've only tried it in Northland in one region.
Okay.
We need to roll that out across the country. It will cost a lot of money because you've got to spend a lot of money to set up stuff like this. It's hard work. But unless we start to reduce the demand, it's just basic sixth form economics or whatever sixth form's called these days. You know, you've got supply and you've got demand, and the only way to reduce demand is through a health approach. Putting people in jail is not even going to stop them. Pee is right through our jails. So we have to treat it as a health approach, not arrest people, but try and get them into help and create a massive support system with the parents ultimately as well, because they are intimately involved in this everywhere you go, where the parents also get support and families and communities can work really hard to get people off pee. I've actually dedicated this documentary to the parents because along the way, meeting so many parents, and we live in a wonderful country, by the way, you know, in Aotearoa, New Zealand. There are so many parents out there, and some of them will be listening or their kids will be listening, who will know the story of a parent who has a child with addiction. It is a painful, painful experience for the parents who invariably never give up on their children. It's an amazing love story in some ways to watch how a mother and father will never give up on a son and daughter who go into basically the worst. It's heartbreaking, but it is a love story because they never give up, and there is always a way out of addiction. It might seem like there isn't, but there is a way out. There is always hope, and this documentary tomorrow is for those people, and there's a lot of them out there in New Zealand, I tell you.
Where'd you start when you started?
We started
How do you start, you know?
Look, you know, we started at customs, actually was our first shoot. And we went out there and we arranged the whole border patrol sort of scenario, you know, and it was really interesting. We said to them, you know, we want to come out and see you guys bust some meth, you know, like border patrol, you know.
Must have been quite fun.
Yeah, no, it was awesome fun.
Patrick Gower, PI.
Yeah, the amount of tech in the, you know. And we said to them, oh, you know, when do we come and how long do we, you know, and they said, oh, come on this morning. And we said, do we need to be there for the afternoon in case we don't find any in the morning? And do we need to have a reserve day in case we don't find any that day?
And they were like, fuck no.
They said, just come in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, Also,
PI is probably the greatest pun you've ever done.
But yeah, they were just like, just come in the morning. We'll find some. And sure enough, we did, you know. Some package came in, just a box, you know, through the post, being sent out to Howick somewhere in a PO box, and had some handbags in it, and dog sniffed it out, and the x-rays go, and you know, customs person's cutting it open, and you know, there's a kg of meth in there. That's $500,000 street value. You know, and that's one package. And you just think, then one morning, one package, 1 kg of meth, that we've found, $500,000 street value. And, you know, how much is coming in here, and how could you ever stop it?
I just thought I'd get some lingo right here. Someone's asking, is pee crack? A lot of times in this country we do call pee crack, but actually officially that's base cocaine, which is sort of the what they call it in America, crack. It's the non-water soluble cocaine. But people have tended to call it crack over here, I guess, because you smoke it like you do, like you would.
And it's got that nasty aspect like crack cocaine does, but no, it's not crack. But people will say, you know, crack ho and that sort of thing. But actually, they're just pee heads.
Yeah,
really. Yeah.
Where else do you go with the documentary?
Look, we track where methamphetamine comes from into this country, and this will surprise a lot of people as well. Mexico and the Sinaloa cartel, which is familiar to lots of Kiwis through, you know, to be honest, through Netflix and watching Narcos and that sort of thing. And obviously we couldn't go there because of COVID, but we Skype, and people will see this, we Skype the Sinaloa cartel. We used a Mexican journalist over there because it's like politics over there. Journalists work in the cartels, like I used to work in Parliament, I guess. And he hooked us up with a contact, and you know, I can't do the sound very good, but bing, bing, boom, 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 boom. You know, the Skype, Skype call, and next minute there's a Mexican on the end of the other on the line with a face mask on and a leather jacket, and packing kilo after kilo of methamphetamine in front of the computer. Yeah. And
mate, I can't stop.
Yeah, I've got to work. Yeah, well, it actually ended up like that. It's ended up, my boss is on the phone, I've got to go. You know, as I was asking more and more questions. But that sort of shows you what we're up against. Yeah. You're up against a brazen operation that doesn't actually give a fuck about going on Skype and doing an interview about it.
And just bombarding our shores with it, right?
Just bombarding. Like, if you think about it, you know, the amount of money that they're making, you know, it's...
They can lose a lot.
$1 million for a kilo.
Yeah, it's worth $1,000 over there, or $1,000 if they can get it into the... Or $10,000 if they can get it into the States. And if they get it into New Zealand or Australia...
We pay the most for our illicit drugs, don't we?
We do. And it just means it's just a numbers game, and whether you can get it through the post or on a ship, or someone can carry it in, or you can get it into a shipping container, or however you can get it in here. And there's a lot of ways. And that's, you know, that's what our border control's up against and our police are up against.
Paddy, you cover in this documentary a story which was, I guess, I don't want to say exciting, but it was outrageous at the time, with a couple out on the West Coast, 90 Mile Beach, picking up like half a ton of methamphetamine.
Yeah.
How did that roll out, and how did you manage to get an interview with one of them?
Yeah, well, Stevie Cullen, who was arrested in that, and he got sentenced to 28 years. I think he's got 12 years non-parole. It's a pretty big sentence, you know, that's... Mm. That's what people get for a really gory murder, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, interviewing him, you've got to go through the corrections service, and they
do all
the
permission.
He's up in Nafa, up north, and people can watch for themselves. But whether he is the greatest criminal mastermind, he is not the greatest criminal mastermind that ever walked in New Zealand's underworld. You know, he explains that actually his passion was gaming, you know, and theatre sports and that sort of thing, and that he just got asked by these guys to get involved in this thing and kind of got out of his depth. It's a bit like a sort of story out of the movies, you know, of someone sort of beavering away in a dead-end job and someone comes in and says, hey, you can make $1 million tomorrow if you come in. All you got to do is come up to 90 Mile Beach and get this package back. And he sort of embarked on that kind of journey. You know, he's now doing a massively long sentence. And admittedly, you know, the amount of destruction that 501 kgs of meth could have done is a lot. But he is not the top guy.
Yeah, right.
He is not the second to top. He is not the third to top. He's not the
someone
fourth,
who tried to grab a little opportunity. Yeah.
That's right. He's right down the tier, and he grabbed an opportunity, and surprise, surprise, he wasn't very good at it. In fact, you know, he says, you know, look, he had a tummy ache on the day, so he wasn't 100% focused.
I heard some crazy stories about, you know, they were asking locals how to launch a boat.
Yeah.
Into the surf.
This one.
That's right. Was, they were
just having yarns at the pub. Oh, I'm going to go buy a boat. Does anybody know how to?
And then they went and bought a boat with 80 grand of cash in a shoebox the whole sort of scenarios. But like I say, he's not the mastermind. So, you know, yes, long sentence, caught out, New Zealand's laughing at them. Hmm. But what are the top tiers of that shipment doing? Hmm. What have they done since then? How much more have they got in? What did they learn from that, you know? Hmm. And I guess that's the scenario there.
Did you manage to get numbers on how much is being produced here as to how much is coming from overseas?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been more produced here during lockdown. Hmm. That's really sort of, you know, it was harder to... just harder to do business.
Right.
But ultimately, it's so cheap from coming in from overseas from these big factories. People will see this factory that's been filmed for us in Mexico. Mm. You know, it's hard to compete with that.
Just on the price, someone's saying, how much of the issue, meth, is the price? If we reduce the price, do we reduce the harm through reduced crime like theft?
Yeah.
That's the legalization or the decriminalization aspect.
And that's got to be a huge aspect of it. Mm. The pricing of it is really, really confusing at the street level. You know, it's not like $20 for a tinny, inflation proof. You know, maybe the size of a tinny has changed, or definitely the size of a tinny has changed down the years, and the amount of buds in a tinny has changed down the years. But with P, I found a really confusing street level market.
Right.
Where
location changes, or
it's given on tick or on credit or free in so many sort of circumstances, and then you deal some back or you let them use some. It's a real sort of complicated ground level market that then very quickly moves to you owing
the money's
huge
promised.
Amounts of money very quickly.
And then you're basically trapped and working for the people.
So, yes, I mean, I agree with this person. If you could remove the pricing issues, you know, you'd remove some of the crime, but To do that, you would actually really have to move to a system. And I can't believe that I now actually consider this realistic. If you'd said this to me two, three years ago, oh, maybe we could give out P to users. The government could give it out like you give out methadone. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could do something like that. Mm. You know, I honestly believe that that's the kind of scenario that we're working, that we're heading towards in this country, where if you really wanted to control it, you'd have to do something quite radical, like give P to people.
Is there a blueprint anywhere else in the world where there is sort of a health-based approach and a legal market for people to, I don't know, get products from anywhere from heroin to P to psychedelics?
You know, Portugal and so on. And
it's also new as well, like, especially the meth thing. I mean, it is massively global.
Yeah, and people are still learning about what it can do.
How do you teach people about the dangers or how to safely use any drug?
I just don't think you can with P. Mm. I just don't think there's any way that you could ever educate people on a way to use it that would be safe. It's the science of it shows what it does to your brain. It sucks out all of the dopamine. So
it's such an intense high, right?
So the first high is so massively intense, and it literally, you know, you can see the dopamine in people's brains. So the dopamine is what makes us feel good. You know, I've had a beer now and I enjoy your guys' company, and I've had a little dopamine hit, you know, when I look
at
my phone.
But you're still in the room.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And then the dopamine goes and it comes back. P sucks it out. So
like ultimate chasing the dragon type shit, eh?
It is. And after using it, people don't have the chemical in their brain to have fun in any other aspect of their life. They can't have fun while they're having sex. They can't have fun while they're listening to music. They can't have fun if they go and run a marathon or an ultra marathon. They can't get any enjoyment out of life unless they get more P that never ever gets them back to the day that they started on it. I mean,
someone just texted in saying the P is the bad luck drug. Anyone that does it has bad luck.
Yeah.
It's kind of pretty accurate, really.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I definitely know a couple of people who have just completely shat out, you know, who are beautiful, you know, and it's just fucking darkness.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all know people that have either shat out on it or... If there are people out there, you know, because there have been quite a few people go to me, I don't really know anyone on it, Patty. I don't think it's a problem. I say to them, think a bit harder, ask a couple more questions, look for that person in your broader circle who's had a marriage breakup or a company's gone under or they've disappeared or something's going on or there's something with their son. It will be close to you, I guarantee it. You might not kind of know it, but it will be close to you.
Now, Patrick Gower on P, is it a two-part series?
No, it's a one-part. Okay, gonna fit all this in 1 hour tomorrow night.
Right on. And then it's Patrick Gower on psychedelics, please.
Yeah,
let's get to the bottom of.
No, but I need something. I need
mushrooms
something.
are the greatest fucking thing that has been around since before us, and we're closely related to them.
How do you advocate for a legal drug market?
Sorry to bombard you, mate, but I think mushrooms.
No.
When there's dangerous drugs, how can you say, "Hey, this drug is fun and okay to use responsibly"?
Well, the thing with mushrooms and the thing with cannabis is, for starters, they are growing out of the ground.
They're so old.
They're out of the ground. They've been in society in different uses for so long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the time is coming for them. Our brains, as everyone is constantly talking about, everyone is walking around depressed or anxious or all of this sort of stuff has come to the fore. And I think the time has come for cannabis, for LSD even, for mushrooms, for a broader argument about legalization, just to help our mental state.
Medicine, let alone, psilocybin is just beautiful medicine.
Yeah, natural medicine.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a big debate to have. But I mean, it's already starting in this. I mean, I was in Colorado.
Right.
Mushrooms are coming through over there, and you know, we're seeing there's a study on mushrooms helping mental health here in New Zealand already. You know, mushrooms will definitely come onto the agenda in this country sooner rather than later, just from a mental health perspective, in my view. You know, that's just a Patty view.
Hey, we really appreciate your view, Patty. Thank you so much for just kicking ass out there and tackling the hard topics, man. It's obviously with the amount of texts we've come through. Thank you, everyone that's put your heart on your sleeve. We really appreciate it. And onwards and upwards, everyone. Hey, let's just fucking band together and see if we can just straighten up.
Yeah, I guess.
Support. Do you know anywhere in the country where the P isn't?
I don't really reckon there is anywhere.
Stewart Island, maybe?
I bet you it's on Stewart Island. Right. I bet you could guarantee it's on Stewart Island. Just the, you know, fishing industry and people going in and out of there, P will be there. I think it might not be in somewhere, if I could pick one place where it might not be, and it might not be in Wanaka. You know, where there's a whole lot of boomers.
True.
But it will be in Luggett, which is next to Wanaka. Mm. It'll be there. It's definitely down in Gore. You know, I think it's everywhere in New Zealand. I think you can get it in 5 minutes in most places. In Auckland, takes about 15 minutes. That's because of traffic.
if someone maybe knows of a friend or family member who is on P, what is a good way to help them out?
Good question,
yep.
John.
Yeah, I think you need to immediately seek whatever support you can find personally for yourself. Mm-hmm. If you're a parent or a partner or a loved one, you need to view yourself virtually as an addict yourself, addicted to
loving.
You
don't need to be alone in it.
No, you need to make sure you're not alone. Yeah. You need to involve your friends and loved ones, and if you can, afford or get to, you know, because you're often going to have to get it yourself, because as I said, it's not there from the government.
Right.
Get yourself support and be ready for the long haul. And then what I've been seeing is this: you can't force them off it, but the day they come ready to get off, have a plan for action.
Mm-hmm. Shit to do. Another something to embrace.
Be ready to get them away somewhere, get them to treatment, get them whatever they come the day that they are ready, and you will have a small window, but it will come. And at that point, that's where people have to do it on their own a lot of times. Some people before COVID could afford to get a family member off to Thailand and into fancy treatment, and that works as well, you know. New Zealand just doesn't have that form of treatment, even in the private sector. We need that there, so that when this moment comes and a family is there and the son or daughter comes to the door and says, "I need to get off this shit, mum and dad," that they are able to pounce, ring a number, get them help. At the moment, they don't have that, and that is frightening, and it actually sucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually sucks.
A lot of people thanking you on the text machine, mate. One more time, thanks from us. And we just got a text in saying it's in Wanaka. So.
Oh, it is in Wanaka. Yeah.
Hey, tune in tomorrow. TV3, is it?
Yep, TV3, 8:30 p.m.
Ka pai. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, guys.